comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, Jerry Wills, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Everyone, and welcome again to Weekend Edition. I'm Jerry Wills, and I host the Weekend Edition for the Kevin Smith Show. Wherever you are, and whoever you might be, welcome to the show. I'm really glad you've decided to tune in this evening. It means a lot to me, and it means a lot to Kevin. If you tuned in last night, of course, you were in for a real treat. We had Tom Horn. Tom was just absolutely incredible. And unfortunately, you know, we didn't have 6 hours to cover all the details with him, and he has so much information. It was just over the top amazing. Tonight is no different. We're going to be switching gears a little bit this evening. What we're going to talk about is health. And I have a really special guest for you this evening. His name is Dr. Jorge Fletches. He's out of North Carolina. And I have a few pages of his credentials here. It's just absolutely astonishing. He has an MD degree, of course. He's a regular doctor. But he also has a Master of Public Health degree. He's a diplomat with the American Board of Family Practice. He's a member of the American College of Nutrition and a member of the New York Academy of Sciences. And he's involved in quite a number of publications that deal with iodine, magnesium, malic acid, it just goes on and on and on. Tonight, the reason why I asked Dr. Fletches to be a guest is because I wanted to go into something that I've been telling a lot of my folks about. That's the use of iodine. And with iodine, you know, we used to be told that iodine was something that was poisonous, that if you take too much iodine, you're going to be poisoned and you're going to be having some problems. All right. Back off the audio a little bit. Kathy, thanks to her, has given me the impetus to know when I've gotten a little over the top with it. Anyway, the iodine issue is something that's very serious. It affects every one of us, everyone watching this show, everyone you know, and everyone they know, and on and on and on. Iodine is something that is absolutely vital for us to survive, to be healthy. Dr. Fletches has spent a lot of time and done a lot of research into this subject. And then there's going to be more. You know, there are things, and we're all aware of this, there are things that have been kept from us. Maybe not kept from us, but they just aren't obvious and out in the open where we could actually take a look and know about things that deal with medicines in our body, nutrition, and so forth. And of course, if you know me, you know that I've been talking about this quite a bit over the past 10 years. Kathy, my wife, has spent all those 10 years researching nutrition. And I think what we're going to find from Dr. Fletches is we're going to find some information made available to us that is going to probably rock our boat. I've talked a lot about top shelf items, things that are out of the public view. One of these items is called oxytocin. You've probably never heard of it, but the reason why you remembered to watch the show this evening is because of Tocin. You see, it's responsible, as Dr. Fletches told me recently, for public memory or social memory. We're going to be back in just a few moments with Dr. Fletches. You're in for a real treat. Hang on, we're going to go to commercial, and as soon as we get out of this, we're going to go directly to Dr. Fletches. and give you a chance to meet him. Don't go away, folks. We'll be back right after this. Hi, folks. We're back. We're back, and we are about to get going here with what I believe is going to be quite a journey into knowledge. As I mentioned a few moments ago, we have Dr. Jorge Fletches here, who is quite the expert in a number of areas. Later, we're going to be taking your calls. This first hour, we're going to be covering some material. I want to bring you up to speed with some of the things that I've learned from Dr. Fletches and some of the things that I know you're going to find interesting. So, Dr. Fletches, are you there with us?
Hello.
Dr. Fletches, can you hear me?
Yes, I sure can.
Welcome to the Weekend Edition with Jerry Wills. We are live on the air. We must have lost you somehow in the mix.
Yeah, the phone just turned off on its own, so I just waited for you to call back.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem. I'm glad you're here, and thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest of mine this evening. I know the folks are very interested to hear what you have to say. I send out a newsletter worldwide called the Expeditions Newsletter, and I've gotten a lot of emails from folks who have expressed quite an interest in hearing you this evening.
Good.
So welcome to the show. I had told folks ahead of the show just a few minutes ago that we were going to be talking about two things, iodine and oxytocin, and anything else you want to talk about. One of the things that I remember from one of our first conversations, you had told me that it used to be people thought that iodine was poisonous. And I think a lot of people are still under that impression. What can you tell us about that?
Well, what's happened is a problem of a schizophrenia that's happening inside medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that if you look at historically about 200 years ago, Napoleon was in the midst of a war and he needed gunpowder.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were trying to get nitrate out of seaweed. And they added too much sulfuric acid to the nitrate, one of the chemist who was working there the next morning came back to his laboratory and found this purple crystal all over his lab.
Wow.
And he didn't know what it was. He submitted it to the French Academy of Science, and they came up with the word iodine because it was a violaceous or a purple-colored chemical. And they said, this is brand new, we've never seen it before either, and so on. It would take probably 20 or 30 years of playing around with iodine before they finally figured out that iodine helps to cure goiters.
Oh.
And back then, goiter was a big problem, especially up in the Swiss Alps. And here in America, it's up in the Great Lakes region. There was about 50 to 56% of the people in the Great Lakes region had problems with goiter.
Wow.
And iodine was one of the first medical treatments that we had available to get rid of goiter. This is at a time period when tuberculosis was rampant, gonorrhea was rampant, syphilis was rampant, and we used to give people strychnine, and we used to give them mercury, and they used to rub mercury into the skin of patients with gonorrhea. The treatment would be successful, but the patient died type thing. But the thing is that iodine was one of the first early success stories in American medicine as far as something that could cure, literally cure, the problem of goiter. By 1924, there was a study done in Akron, Ohio, where 56% of the people in Akron had problems with goiters. So what they did is that they gave them 9 milligrams of iodine per day to get rid of their, to see if that would help to get rid of goiter. And what they found was is that among children, the goiter rate was equal to 1 to 1. One little boy to one little girl. For every little boy who developed a goiter, there was a little girl that developed the same problem.
I see.
But at age 12 or 13, when the girls went through puberty, the rate of goiter went to 6 to 1. Six girls to one boy.
Huh.
And with giving 9 milligrams of iodine per day, the problem of goiter disappeared among these kids. And it was soon after 1924 that they decided to start giving iodine to prevent goiter. And by 1929, they were putting iodine inside the salt. And through the 1930s, we eventually got rid of the vast majority of patients who went on to develop goiter. And it wasn't until sometime in the 1960s or 70s that all of a sudden we're talking iodine being used as a poison, when in fact it was one of the best treatments there was for just about every major known disease out there.
How did it get classified as a poison? I don't understand how that happened.
It was one of those things that in medicine they were trying to push the concept of the use of radioactive iodine.
Oh, okay.
And in order to be able to use that, you had to get rid of the iodine in the population. So therefore, you know, because they used to put iodine in the bread. One slice of bread would provide 150 micrograms of iodine per day, and people were eating, you know, 5 or 6 slices of bread a day, and they decided to take the iodine out of the bread. We used to use iodine in cleaning the tits of cows when they were milking them. And they took the iodine out of the milking process so that the iodine wouldn't contaminate the milk. And today, we still put iodine into the salt, but it turns out that iodized salt, or the salt issue, if you look at the medical doctors today, they're encouraging everybody to eat less and less salt.
Right.
Which means that basically you're taking away the iodine for the whole population.
Well,
now, one of the crucial elements about iodine is the fact that iodine is used by the body to make thyroid hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And in today's world, here in North America, hypothyroidism, low thyroid disease, is very, very, very common.
Yes, it
is. But that's because we're limiting the amount of iodine that the population is getting.
So the people are just not getting iodine anyplace. The government, whoever that is within the government, was wanting to push radioactive iodine on the population?
They were wanting to make it so that you could do radioactive studies without having to worry about how much iodine there was in the population.
Oh, I see.
It's of interest that here in South Carolina, that up into about 1938, 1939, South Carolina was known as the iodine state.
Really?
And that's because the ocean used to be as far up as Columbia, South Carolina.
Huh.
And then it receded to where today it's down towards Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
But that all that land in there was covered with ocean and seaweed and everything else, and that land was loaded with iodine, and it was in South Carolina, from Columbia down towards Charleston, was known as a iodine-rich area. Today, we don't harvest the iodine out of the land or even the ocean. We have discovered that iodine is found in old oil wells.
Really?
If you go to an oil well, at the base of the oil well is a lot of organic material that was buried thousands of years ago. And they pump salt water into the old oil well that's already dried up. Mm-hmm. And then they suck all the salt water back out, and from that they harvest the iodine. So the iodine that's being used worldwide today is coming out of old oil wells that have already been dried up.
Well, that's just fascinating.
Yeah.
So the level of iodine they were giving for goiter, and the reason why, you know, I have an interest in it is because I've been reading about this product called Iodorol, which comes in 12.5, 25, and 50 milligram varieties. And, you know, there's always going to be probably a little touch of apprehension throughout the population for the use of iodine, because when I was a child, I grew up in the hills of Kentucky.
Right.
And I remember being told, you'll poison yourself, you'll die, son. You don't get that iodine in your mouth. And now we're talking about taking iodine in a strength of, I've been reading up to, maybe up to 100 milligrams. I don't know. I just found 50 milligram Iodorol. I've ordered it.
Right.
What is the strength that a person would use?
You know, what's interesting is that back about 100 years ago, they were using iodine for just about everything that walked, that was sick or diseased.
Mm-hmm.
And, doctors would give iodine for treatment of fungus infections of the nail,
mm-hmm.
or to treat a yeast infection inside the human body. And we're talking about giving 12,000 milligrams of iodine per day. That's how much iodine they were using.
Wow.
That was 100 years ago. And and even in my own training, I was trained in family practice back in the late 1970s, and we had patients with emphysema, patients with asthma who were being treated with a product called SSKI, which stands for supersaturated potassium iodide. And these patients were being given 400 milligrams of iodine per day, 3 to 4 times per day, in order to treat their asthma or their emphysema.
Wow.
It turns out that one of the unique features of iodine is that it helps to break up the real sticky mucus that's produced by patients who have emphysema or asthma, etc. And that's one of the reasons why they were using it. But they were using 400 milligram 3 to 4 times a day. Iodorol is only 50 milligrams.
Right.
So for doctors to sit there and say, you know, iodine, that stuff is really poisonous. They have totally forgotten the fact that we used to give, 100 years ago, 12,000 milligrams a day. And even as late as 30, 40 years ago, we were giving 400 milligrams 3 or 4 times a day. For people to try to sit there and say that 1 milligram is toxic or 5 milligrams that's toxic, that's a bunch mm-hmm. of nonsense. Now, in the original studies done in Akron, Ohio, they were giving these children 9 milligrams of iodine per day,
mm-hmm.
and that took the goiter rate in the area from 56% of the population having goiter to less than 1% of the population having goiter within a period of about 10 or 15 years.
Well, we've got a break coming up in about 45 seconds.
Okay.
When we come back from the break, I'd like to discuss the benefits of iodine, what a person might expect who's taking the iodine, and how long it would be before before they would start noticing any effects. I've been taking 50 milligrams since yesterday. You and I had our conversation yesterday,
right.
And today, last night I took 50 milligrams on top of what I'd already taken. And today I've taken 50 milligrams. So when we come back, I think this is something that folks would be interested to hear about.
Yeah, let's do that.
All righty. Well, we're going to go for... oh, wait a minute. You know what? I was looking at the clock wrong. I don't have my glasses on. Why don't you go ahead and answer that question? We've got 2 minutes. I'm sorry.
Well, let's look at iodine. Get old. First off, let's look at iodine deficiency and what it looks like inside the human body.
All right.
A goiter, which is an enlargement of the thyroid, is usually a series of cyst, nodules, scar tissue enlargement, and that's goiter.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that breast tissue needs lots of iodine also, and the absence of iodine in the breast gives you cyst, nodules, scar tissue enlargement, and pain. That's otherwise known as fibrocystic breast disease, which is a problem that women have when they have cyclic breast pain just before their periods.
Okay.
Lack of iodine to the ovary, you get cyst, nodule, scar tissue enlargement, pain, and that's known as polycystic ovaries. And lack of iodine to the skin, you're going to find yourself with nodules. And we have found that lack of iodine to the skin, you have problems with dry skin. That is, people who get real hot and they don't sweat.
I see.
The sweat mechanism in humans is totally dependent upon your ability to have iodine.
Okay.
And the lack of iodine to the muscles, you have, again, nodules, pain, scar tissue, and it turns out that that's a disease known as fibromyalgia. And, you know, it basically, when you start taking iodine, just about all these diseases will disappear within a period of just a few months.
All right. Well, hold that thought, doctor. We're going to go to break now. I have my glasses on. I can see what time it's supposed to happen. We'll find out if it does anything for your eyes when we come back, all right?
That's right.
All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Don't go away. It gets better and better. Back with Dr. Fletches in just a moment. All right, folks, we're back with Dr. Fletches. I have my glasses on, so I can pay attention now to what the time is on those little screen numbers on my computer monitor. Try not to make that mistake again, Dr. Fletches. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
When we went to break, you were telling us about the how fibromyalgia and fibrocystic breast tissue and ovaries and... Is this a cure, or is it just treat it?
Based upon the work that's been done by Dr. Bernard Eskin from Drexel University, It would look like it's the cure.
Wow.
And here's the other thing, too, is that back 100 years ago, we knew that people who had goiter had a higher incidence of cancer. People with goiter had a higher incidence of breast cancer, stomach cancer, esophageal cancer, ovarian cancer, endometrial cancer. And as we've looked at these, we found out that these tissues are all iodine dependent. So the problem in medicine is that we have focused our attention on the thyroid because of its holding iodine.
Mm-hmm.
What we did not account for was the fact that there were other tissues that were holding iodine also. So, you know, so here's a simple way to look at this.
All right.
You look at the plain thyroid. Iodine deficiency of the thyroid, you get cyst, nodule, scar tissue enlargement, we call it goiter.
All right.
What we haven't said is the fact that goiter, people with goiters have a higher incidence of thyroid cancer.
Huh.
Lack of iodine to the normal breast, you get cysts, nodules, scar tissue, enlargement, and pain, especially just before a period. And about 3 or 4 years ago in the New England Journal of Medicine, they pointed out that women who had fibrocystic breast disease had a much higher incidence of breast cancer.
I remember reading that.
Iodine to the lack of iodine to the ovary, you have cysts, nodules, scar tissue, enlargement, and pain, and we call that polycystic ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
And every gynecologist, every GYN endocrinologist knows that women with PCOS, polycystic ovaries, by the time they hit their late 40s, early 50s, will go on to develop ovarian cancer. So that the fact that iodine deficiency in every one of these tissues, if left alone and if left present, will push these tissues towards development of cancer. Let me make one statement that everybody needs to put it into their minds real deep.
All right.
The absence of iodine in the human body is a promoter of cancer.
Wow, that's quite a statement. What if
you go up here?
Go ahead.
You go up here to the Great Lakes region, where they had lots of hypothyroidism and goiters secondary to the absence of iodine. And when you look at the cancers that are more common in that area, the number one cancer in that area is breast cancer.
Incredible. Doctor, what if a person already has cancer? Does the iodine do anything to help them?
Usually not, but there are ongoing studies going on. Like, there are studies going on down in Mexico right now by a Dr. Achives, where this study was done about 2 years ago, where they looked at women who had a biopsy done of the breast, mm-hmm. and the biopsy showed breast cancer. The women were then placed on iodine, and within 5 or 6 weeks, they had their breast taken off or the cancer removed.
Mm-hmm.
And when they looked at these cancers under the microscope after they were removed with exposure of only 5 or 6 weeks of iodine, something like 95% of all these cancers were dying inside the breast already.
My word.
So, you know, I think there's work to be done. This is not work that will probably ever get done here in America, in North America, in the United States. But they're doing this type of research down in Mexico, and it's, you know, it's showing, and the doctors that are doing it are very, very qualified surgeons and oncologists and people who have been trained, very well trained, and they're showing us that there's definitely something here that's reversible.
How much iodine would you suppose, if a person had cancer? I don't, thank God. But if someone listening has cancer and they see this as maybe a pinpoint of light of hope, what would you say to them if they said, how much should I use if I wanted to try this?
Well, you know, the answer comes to us from the Asian Indians in India.
Mm-hmm.
They published a paper approximately 5 years ago where they were looking at the issue of how much iodine needs to be in the body in order to inhibit the ability of the body to develop cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was 10 to the minus 5 concentration. Currently, most of us that are sitting around out there have a concentration of iodine that's about 10 to the minus 10.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get it from a minus 10 to a minus 5 concentration, you need approximately 100 milligrams of iodine per day.
Per day. So my my 50 is basically, you know,
50 is maintenance dose.
Oh, okay.
We're trying to treat somebody who's got cancer, and if we're trying to inhibit a cancer from growth, that'll do it. But again, not all cancers have the ability to absorb iodine. In fact, if you look at breast cancer alone, 80% of breast cancers have the ability to absorb iodine. 20% do not. In fact, the Asian Indians went further, and they looked at what is it about iodine and breast cancer that is so unique. And they found that the problem is that the ability of the body to attach iodine to the proteins inside the body.
Oh, okay.
This is called organification.
Mm-hmm.
And organification, again, is the ability of the body to attach iodine to the proteins inside of it. Now, it turns out that 100%, and let me reemphasize that word, 100% of all women who have breast cancer cannot organify the iodine in their body. That is, even if you put iodine into the body cannot attach the iodine to its proteins. Why? Because you need two vitamins that are crucial towards that organification, and that's vitamin B2 and vitamin B3.
Okay.
Otherwise known as riboflavin and niacin. And so people need close to 1,000 milligrams of niacin a day and about 200 to 300 milligrams of riboflavin a day, with 50 milligrams of iodine twice a day. And that has been helpful to a tremendous number of patients who have just even breast cancer.
Is that the ATP cofactor you were talking about?
That's called ATP cofactor, and it's made by Optimox.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the same ones who make Iodorol. We sell these two products at the office, and we have found that this really does make a difference. Since I've been introducing iodine to my patient population at the office, we've seen the rate of breast cancer in my, amongst my patients go way down.
Wow.
In fact, I don't think we've had, we used to diagnose maybe 2 or 3, 4 patients a year with breast cancer, but ever since I've been aggressive at treating all the women with iodine for fibrocystic breast disease or whatever the problem is, I think in the last 2 years we've only diagnosed one woman as having problems with breast cancer.
So if
that was a woman who showed up having the problem. It wasn't somebody who had been on iodine for a long period of time.
So for example, myself or my wife, Kathy, we're taking 50 milligrams maintenance, which we're going to up that soon. But we're not taking the ATP cofactor. Is it doing anything for us?
It probably will, but the better choice is to add to that the ATP cofactor.
Mm-hmm.
And that will help to organify, that is, to attach the iodine to the proteins in the body.
I see.
The unique thing about iodine is that cancer cells think of themselves as being immortal.
Mm-hmm.
And iodine takes away the immortality of cancer cells. Cancer
wow.
cells think that they can live forever and ever and ever. Iodine says you don't live forever. You're supposed to die after so many days of existence, and that's exactly what's going to happen to you. And iodine takes away that immortality. That's interesting, too. The absence of iodine to the skin, you get problems with very dry skin and a skin that doesn't sweat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, about 5 years ago, I gave a lecture in Puerto Rico, and I made that statement. I said, skin that doesn't have iodine doesn't sweat. And then I'd also made mention that the absence of iodine is a promoter of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
This pharmacologist who teaches at the University of Puerto Rico came up to me and he says, 5 years ago, my mother came up to me and said, son, I need to have you try to figure out why I can't sweat anymore.
Wow.
And he looked at her and he said, Mommy, why do you want to sweat? He said, when you sweat, you get stinky. Who wants to get stinky? And she said, son, I think medicine has gotten to your mind. She said, we live in Puerto Rico. It's 90 degrees out there. It's 100% humidity. You're supposed to sweat in that type of stuff. And she says, so don't give me the stinky bit. Just figure out why my skin's not able to sweat anymore. And every year after that, at her birthday, she would look at her son and say, have you figured out why I can't sweat? And he'd say, Mom, you don't want to get stinky. And about 6 months before I went to the island and gave that lecture, his mother was diagnosed as having breast cancer, and within 6 months that cancer killed her, and he had just buried his mother approximately five weeks prior to listening to my lecture about dry skin and iodine.
My gosh.
Absence of iodine to the skin is a skin that when it gets hot does not sweat.
Well, we're into a break, Dr. Fletches. Hold that thought. We've got some more I want to go into with you. Folks, of course, the break takes over. I have much control over it at this point. We'll be back with Dr. Fletches right after this. Don't go away. Folks, we're back with Dr. Jorge Fletches. Wow, what a show this is. I hope you've not missed any of it, because I'll tell you what, this is just absolutely amazing stuff. Dr. Fletches, you're talking about people who weren't able to sweat. And during the break, I was reflecting back on one of our conversations where you had mentioned something about coronary artery disease or hardening of the arteries. Is that right?
Right. Let me just work off the dry skin issue.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I went to Southern California, and I gave a lecture in Los Angeles
mm-hmm.
to approximately 1,000 patients who had cancer, not just breast cancer, but all sorts of cancers.
Mm-hmm.
And I made this statement. I said, you know, how many of you prior to and even after the diagnosis of cancer, but how many of you have had problems with not being able to sweat? And out of 1,000 people that were there, close to 250, almost one-fourth of that whole population of cancer patients, stood up and said, we cannot sweat. In fact, one lady looked at me and she said, when I was a little girl, she said, I used to play outside and run and jump like all the other kids.
Mm-hmm.
But when everybody else was sweating, she said, I never sweated. She said, I'm 45 years old, and my body has already generated 3 different types of cancer, all unrelated except for the one fact, I've never been able to sweat since I was 12 years old. And I'm 45 years old now.
Wow.
So it kind of shows you that the importance of just that little statement.
So when
now, here's another one.
All right.
The one of the animal models that we have for hardening of the arteries
mm-hmm.
is the rabbit. If you give a rabbit, rabbits normally have a cholesterol of about 80.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give a rabbit cholesterol, like the yolk of an egg,
right?
These rabbits can get cholesterol levels of close to 1,500.
Wow.
Whereas, if you look at why certain animals get hardening of the arteries and others don't. It turns out that those animals that don't get hardening of the arteries, even if you give them lots and lots of cholesterol, is because the animal makes a huge amount of vitamin C.
Hmm.
Like a goat makes almost 12,000 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C on a daily basis.
Wow.
And it turns out that the antioxidant activity of vitamin C is what helps to protect the body from the ravages of hardening of the arteries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the rabbits don't make vitamin C, neither does the pig. And as a result, these animals get hardening of the arteries if you give them a high cholesterol diet. Back in 1933, they conducted a very interesting experiment where they took some rabbits and they gave them iodine, Lugol solution, what's inside that iodorol pill that you're taking.
Mm-hmm.
They gave these animals iodine, Lugol solution, plus they gave them the high cholesterol diet. These animals had cholesterol levels of almost 1,400.
All right.
It's interesting that the controlled animals that got no iodine, something like 98% of those animals after 1 year had severe atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries. But the animals that were taking the iodine plus the cholesterol, only about 2 or 3% of those animals developed hardening of the arteries. 95-97% of those animals had zero hardening of the arteries in the presence of taking the iodine. So, you know, I studied that a long time ago. I've been taking iodine now for about 9 to 10 years. And about a year ago, I had some belly pain, so I had a CT scan done of my abdomen just to make sure everything was clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been taking 50 milligrams of iodine a day. When the radiologist looked at the films, he came and talked to me personally, and he said, I just want to let you know. He says, for a man that's 58 years old, he said, you have zero atherosclerosis in the blood vessels of your body.
Wow.
He said, you have no evidence of hardening of the arteries anywhere in your blood vessels. I said, well, thank you very much. Thank you for the information. You know, I didn't tell him that I was taking iodine.
What?
But, you know, what happened to the rabbits was also happening to me in the sense that taking iodine, I have developed zero hardening of the arteries.
Well, what?
Now, that would be just me studied number one. However,
sure.
Throughout the years, there have been a total of about 5 studies done in humans and in animals where they have confirmed everything I just said. So it's not just me speaking. We've got the evidence out there that there, you know, that this does work.
Dr. Fletches, if a person already has hardening of the arteries and they start using this, does it do any good?
We don't know. You know, nobody's ever studied this, but I think I'm just raising this as a flag to tell everybody, you know, that in American medicine, we're pushing down of statins. You know, we're giving everybody statins,
right,
to lower their cholesterol. And it may be that what we're doing, you know, and studies that have now been done show that there's at least 17 different factors that are known to cause hardening of the arteries. It's not just cholesterol.
Right.
And in medicine, we're concentrating on trying to get the cholesterol down, and it's not working.
Yeah.
In fact, let me just give you this interesting one. They did a recent study. This was just published in the last year, where they gave a statin to a group of patients, and they looked at hardening of the arteries and the blood vessels of the neck. And giving the statin, there was a 9% increase in hardening of the arteries. Flip side of the coin is that they took these patients who were taking another group of patients and gave them a statin. But this time they gave them pomegranate juice, which contains a very powerful antioxidant.
Right.
An anti-inflammatory agent. They gave them pomegranate juice plus the statin. And at the end of 1 year, there was a 36% decrease in hardening of the arteries inside the blood vessels of the neck.
That's very impressive.
It just pretty much shows us that we're making too much out of concentrating on cholesterol, and we need to start looking at the other 17 factors that are known to induce hardening of the arteries. And in fact, you look at this thing called inflammation,
mm-hmm.
and people with lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, where their bodies are constantly inflamed with these inflamed joints, these people also have a higher risk of developing of hardening of the arteries more so than the rest of the population.
Wow.
So we think that iodine is working as an anti-inflammatory inside the body. Now, another thing that we've seen is that iodine, this was just published probably in the last 2 years by Dr. Eskin from Drexel University, and Dr. Eskin showed that iodine decreases the amount of estrogen in the body. If there's 16 different genetic steps that the body has to go through in order to make an estrogen molecule, iodine turns off 14 out of the 16 steps. This helps to explain why, you know, we've been talking about for probably the last 20 years the fact that women in today's generation are estrogen dominant. They've got too much estrogen in their body, and as a result, it's pushing them towards development of cancer. We now have another key to help us understand how iodine works, and that is iodine turns off the ability of the body to make lots of estrogen.
That's pretty impressive. We've got a break coming up in about 45 seconds.
Okay.
And I'd like to continue with this line of thought. Also, we're going to be opening up the phone lines for folks who may have a question. And later, maybe in the next hour, or if we go into after hours, I want to talk about oxytocin as well. I think this is important for folks to know about.
Yeah, you really want to open up a Pandora's box, don't you?
Absolutely. And I'm wondering also about this information. Why isn't this on the news? You know, is this being suppressed somehow? And we can get into that when we come back. The break is taken over. But stay with us, Doctor, and I really am grateful for you being here with us tonight.
No problem.
Stick around, folks, stick around. It's getting better from here, and if you want to go deeper down the rabbit hole than Pandora's box, we're going to be talking about oxytocin as well. So pull your socks up and sit down. You're going to like this one. We'll be back, folks, after this break. And we're back, folks. Thanks for hanging with us after that break. Put my glasses back on so I can watch the time correctly. We have a really special fellow with us this evening, Dr. Jorge Fletches. And if you've missed this first hour, well, you're going to have to go to the member section and tune in after the show. Hopefully we'll be able to get it up. Last night, there was a computer malfunction, and the show was recorded, but it was all garbled. I don't know what happened exactly. So I apologize in advance for that. Our guest tonight, as I said, is Dr. Jorge Fletches. And Dr. Fletches, you were just finishing a thought, I believe, when we went to break. Did you have anything more to say on that subject?
Not really. What I did want to mention is the effects of iodine on the human brain.
Oh, yeah. You know something, Dr. Fletches? Kathy came in and wanted me to ask you, does the lack of iodine cause a person to feel depressed or out of sorts? You know, the feeling of well-being, does it have an effect on that? And weight gain, that sort of thing.
Well, let me just give you an interesting story, and that'll lead us where we need to go.
All right, very good.
I had a patient who had a problem with a lack of libido.
Uh-huh.
This was a lady who was probably in her early 40s, And we gave her the human libido, that is, the desire to have relations in women, is controlled by their adrenals. It's not controlled by the gonads. And as a result, the hormone that controls the female libido is DHEA, which can be bought over-the-counter from any health food store.
Mm-hmm.
But DHEA, I usually give somewhere between 25 and 50 milligrams a day.
All right.
We took this lady all the way up to 300 milligrams a day, and she had no libido.
Wow.
We then gave her a little bit of testosterone.
All right.
And we gave her the human body, the human female body, makes between 2 and 10 milligrams of testosterone a day.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a young male makes between 100 and 200 milligrams of testosterone a day.
Mm-hmm.
We gave her 2, 5, 10, 25, 50, 100 milligrams of testosterone. And then all of a sudden her libido kicked in.
Hmm.
And I said, you know, we can't do this because you're going to start growing something around in your body that you don't want, like
sure.
facial hair, like a male organ or something.
Right.
And she said, well, you kind of watch me and monitor me, and if it should become a problem, then I'll stop it. She said, but, you know, this has given me such a nice sex drive. My husband and I are enjoying each other for the first time in years.
Sure.
So I gave her, a few years later, we noticed that she had fibrocystic breast disease on a physical, her breasts were getting real tender,
mm-hmm.
and we put her on some iodine to reverse the hardening, you know, the fibrocystic breast disease, that is the real painful breast tissue just before the period.
Right.
Well, the breast pain disappeared, but all of a sudden she came in about 3 weeks later and says, you know what? She said, I can't, after I go to the bathroom, I can't wipe myself because it's so painful. And so, I looked her over, I checked her out, and I said, well, you don't have an ulcer, you don't have any infection, you don't have anything there. So I called up a gynecologist, and he sat there and said, when we work in the infertility clinics and we give women testosterone, he said, there's a signal to let us know that we gave them too much, and that is that the genital tissues become extremely tender to the presence of testosterone. I said, you know what, that's a great statement, except this lady's been on 100 milligrams of testosterone a day for 4 years.
Wow.
So I said, there's something else going on. He said, well, what else have you done? I said, well, I put her on iodine to treat her fibrocystic breast disease. He said, well, iodine is notoriously known for increasing the ability of the body to respond to its own hormone.
Oh, no kidding.
So I said, okay. So he said, just take her off testosterone for about 3 or 4 weeks. Everything should calm down. And then just keep her on the iodine like you've been doing to treat the breast. And then let's see how she does. Well, I'm glad to say that today she has a very healthy, active sexual life on 2 milligrams of testosterone every other day.
That's substantial.
While she's taking iodine.
And
now, it turns out that iodine increases the receptivity of every hormone receptor in the whole body. And we're not talking just testosterone. We're talking FSH, LH, the two hormones that run the ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking cortisone from the adrenals. We're talking DHEA. We're talking testosterone, obviously. We're talking about the thyroid hormones. We've had patients who are taking thyroid hormone, and it's as if the body doesn't recognize the fact that there's thyroid hormone there. But once they start taking iodine, within just a few weeks, all of a sudden the body starts responding to the fact that now that there's iodine on the thyroid hormone receptor, all of a sudden the thyroid hormone can attach to that receptor, and the body says, ah, we've been looking for you. Where have you been?
Right.
And basically, you know, it's true for all these hormones. Now, it turns out that there is an active iodine pump at what's called the choroid plexus. This is a tissue up inside the brain where the body can pump fluid straight into the cerebrospinal fluid.
Mm-hmm.
That is that you can pump fluid from the blood into the brain through these filters, and it's called the choroid plexus. And guess what? The body has inside that choroid plexus the ability to concentrate iodine into the central nervous system.
Really?
Which is to say that Jerry Wills took some iodine last night.
Uh-huh.
And did you find yourself just dreaming a lot and very mentally alert this morning?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, one of the things that I was commenting to Kathy about is that, you know, I'm typically a pretty even-keeled person. I have my moments, as we all do. But sometimes I just get stressed out. And since I've been taking the iodine in this lower dosage, because remember, I started out at 12.5 milligrams twice a day. Now that I've upped it, I just feel calm. And I can't explain why I feel calm. I just do. And I don't feel tired.
That's right. And what's happened is that the body, the brain, through the choroid plexus, has been pumping a lot of that iodine that sits inside your bloodstream into your brain, and there's a lot of brain hormones up above that are now attaching to their receptors, and the whole brain is calming down.
Wow.
Because you're more mentally alert.
You know, and I feel really good, Dr. Fletches. We have a caller on the line. Let's bring up the line here. Hi, welcome to Weekend Edition. I'm Jerry Wills. Your name and where are you calling from, please? Oops, sorry. Oh, you know what? I pushed the wrong button. If you'd please call back. I got distracted because I feel so good. I pushed the wrong cotton-picking button. Sorry about that, Dr. Fletches. It's eye-hand coordination I have to work on next, I suppose.
Well, you know what? The lack of iodine in early pregnancy and the first 5 or 6 months of pregnancy, the absence of iodine during that time period is felt to be the reason why we have the problem attention deficit disorder. This was written up by the Italians, some Italian doctors a few years ago, and they showed that the absence of iodine in early pregnancy is felt to be the reason why we have so much attention deficit disorder at this time.
All right, we have the caller on the line now. Thanks for calling. I hope it's you who called back. Your name and where are you calling from, please? Yeah, Sharon, you're going to talk a little bit louder. You're pretty low. Let me try to bring the volume up. Go ahead. You'll need to turn down your radio in the background as well, Sharon.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now.
All right, you need to turn down the radio in the background.
Yes, I just did.
All right, good. You had a question for Dr. Fletches or a comment?
Yes. I had my ovaries out in 1985. And 6 months later, I had severe depression, and I've had it ever since, and I just can't seem to get rid of it. And the only thing that's ever helped me was I went to Jerry, and he helped me a lot. But other than that, I've taken a lot of different antidepressants. I've been to HRT, vitamin therapy, homeopathic, and naturopathic, and I can't seem to get any relief. Is there anything you could do or suggest?
Well, why was the uterus removed, and did they take out your ovaries also?
They, I had them done different times, and the ovaries went out because I was having a lot of pressure and a lot of urinary and a lot of different things like that.
Okay.
And they took both of them out.
So. Okay. Now, a lot of times, depression can be due to the lack of DHEA from the adrenals. Have you noticed that you've had a decrease in your libido and your desire to have relations?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There have been studies, probably there's now been about 20 studies that have been done looking at the issue of DHEA deficiency from the adrenal and the development of cancer. And the development of depression. And you might look into that and also the use of iodine to see if that would make a difference. But you can take the DHEA from any health food store, and you can buy DHEA, and you need probably around 50 milligrams a day.
Okay.
Yeah,
iodine, should I do 100 or...
Well, you had cancer?
No, no.
Yeah, if you've had no cancer, then the treatment would be 50 milligrams a day with ATP cofactor. And that that's the vitamin B2 and vitamin B3.
Okay.
And they now make it as a sustained-release tablet, and that's called ATP cofactor. You can call my office, and we can send that to you.
Okay.
It's 828-684-3233.
Okay.
And we're in the Appalachian Mountains just south of Asheville, North Carolina. And we're on Eastern Standard Time, so wherever you're located, you can try to figure out the timing. My secretary is usually there by 9 o'clock in the morning.
All right, did that answer your question, Sharon?
Yes, I'll try it.
All right, good.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for calling, and I hope if I hung up on you accidentally, please forgive me.
That's okay.
All right, thank you. Okay. You know, it brings up another another issue that I wanted to get into in this hour, which is oxytocin. But we have another caller coming in immediately, so let's take the caller, Dr. Fletches, and see who this is. Nope, they're not there. Before we get into oxytocin, is there a reason why we're not being given this information? I mean, what you've told us is absolutely unbelievable. Well, it's not unbelievable. I believe it. But you understand what I'm saying. It's just groundbreaking news. I mean, this could affect the lives of millions of people, and you're doing people such a service, maybe saving lives, by bringing this information forward.
Right.
Is there a reason why we're not being given this information?
And you know what's going to happen is that a lot of your clientele are going to go talk to their doctor and say, you know, I heard this guy on the program last night, and he was sitting there saying that we're not getting enough iodine. And he's going to look at that person and say, look, we have iodine in the salt, and that's all we need. And therefore, you know, that guy's just dead wrong. You know what the problem with that statement is and what that doctor is saying? He's assuming that every woman in North America is cooking with iodized salt. And studies have been done now. They're finding out that half the women in North America are cooking with salt that has no iodine. Half of this population has no iodine in their diet. There's no iodine in the milk. There's no iodine in the bread. And they're not. And women are cooking with salt that has no iodine in it, period. If you look at the problem called senility, getting senile, mentally confused, 25% of the people over age 60 become senile due to low thyroid disease, lack of iodine, and the ability of the body to make thyroid hormone.
Wow.
So that's how important this issue is. And yet, most physicians think, oh, there's plenty of iodine in the system because the public health service is making sure of that. You know, that would be a nice statement, except for the fact that women are not cooking with iodized salt. And a lot of it may be just pure out of ignorance or what, you know, or the fact that maybe some of them are thinking that, well, this stuff is a bunch of poison.
Yeah.
Not poison. This is crucial towards life.
We have a caller. Hi, welcome to Weekend Edition. I'm Jerry Wills. Your name and where are you calling from, please? Hello? Well, sounds like they decided to go away. I don't know. Perhaps they'll call back. We'll release the line, folks, if you want to call in. Ah, there we go. Hi, welcome to Weekend Edition. This is Jerry Wills. Your name and where are you calling from, please?
Jerry, this is Tony from North Carolina.
Hello, Tony. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Fletches?
Yes. How are you doing, Jerry, and how are you, Dr. Fletches?
Doing fine.
Thank you. So where in the great state of North Carolina are you calling from?
Yeah, where in North Carolina, Tony?
Up near Raleigh.
Okay.
Okay.
This is very interesting because when I'm 57 years old, and when I was a younger man, my grandmother, she was a full Cherokee Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to go to her house, and every morning, religiously, she took iodine and a drop of, she took iodine, a drop of iodine, and a spoonful of cod liver oil, and something else, which she would never tell us what it was, but she said that helped her.
Wow. Well, that's pretty impressive. So, you know, she knew that it was important.
You know, what's interesting
evidently
is
she knew what was taking was helping her. And she lived to be 90 years old.
Yeah, I would believe that.
What were you going to say, Dr. Fletches?
It's interesting that we've been giving, in Japan, the average Japanese eats 13.8 milligrams of iodine per day, whereas here in North America, the average American is eating around 138 micrograms of iodine per day, not milligrams, micrograms.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what's happening is that iodine throughout pregnancy and iodine for the first 2 years of life after the birth of a baby, iodine is what's responsible for the IQ of a baby. It sets the IQ in concrete. And we have got kids left and right in our practice who are just the smartest little things you've ever seen in your life.
Wow.
And these kids are just, you know, when you put them up against normal little kids, you find out that these children have very, very high IQs. And I've talked to Japanese families, and they say, yeah, you know, it's one thing to have a child that is taking iodine like we do in our family, but they said, but when you live with very intelligent children, you find yourself, you know, in a situation where you've got to constantly be keeping up with these kids as far as giving them the appropriate stimulation with music, with mathematics, with sciences, with this and that and so on, because these little children are nothing but living sponges of knowledge.
Wow.
And, you know, the fact that this gentleman's grandmother used to give him iodine, that says a lot about ancient folklore that is still relevant today in today's society.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's switch gears. Let's go into oxytocin. I've been reading a lot about this and don't know but the tip of the iceberg, really. It's very interesting to me.
if anyone is listening and wants to call, for you out there, it's 602-288-9199 or toll free 888-223-4599, or you can go to kevinsmithshow.com and you can send a flash message. I'll bring up the system here so I can check to make sure. If you send one, I'll get it. And it's on. We're going to be talking about oxytocin. actually, Dr. Fletchus, we have a break coming up in about 20 seconds. Can you give us just a sound bite in 10 seconds or less?
We can do that. Yeah.
All right. Well,
and,
we're on a countdown here. We've got about 8, 4, 3, 2, 1. So we're going to be going to a break, Dr. Fletchus.
Sounds great.
We'll be back, folks, right after this. You're not going to want to miss this information about oxytocin. Call in with your questions or comments. Lines are open. We'll be waiting to hear from you. So we'll be back right after all this. We're back, folks. Great break, wasn't it? We're back with Dr. Jorge Fletchus, and we're going to be talking about oxytocin. I've saved this part, Dr. Fletchus, for the last part of the program, not because it is going into human sexuality, but which is a part of it, but also because I wanted to get a lot of information out there about iodine. I wanted folks to have a real clear idea of what that is and how it's used, and try to dispel some of the myths about iodine. I think, as you do, that it's extraordinarily important. It's more important to me now than it was before the show started, and it was already important to me then, so you've done me a great service. We do have a caller, so before we go into oxytocin, let's take the caller, all right? Hi, welcome to Weekend Edition. I'm Jerry Wills. Your name and where are you calling from, please?
Jerry, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent. Thanks for calling in.
Sure. I hate to interrupt you in your oxytocins or whatever it is, but I have a question for the good doctor.
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Go for it.
Is it possible that iodine might help in the connecting the synapses needed for psychic development?
Oh, that's an interesting question. What do you think, Doctor?
What was the question again?
Do you think that the iodine may help with the interconnectivity in the brain to assist with psychic development?
Psychic development?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. Oxytocin is more in that category, more so than iodine is.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's fascinating. Explain that.
Yeah.
And do you want to stay on the line, or do you want to take it off the air? Hello?
Are you, you're talking to the guy with in Wyoming?
Oh, he took it off the air. Go ahead.
Okay, here's what happens. Is 100 years ago,
mm-hmm.
One of the devastating problems of medicine is that you would have this young lady that would come to you. She's pregnant. And you help her throughout her whole pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go deliver the baby, and after the baby is born, the uterus is supposed to contract down and shut down all the blood vessels in the uterus that were feeding the placenta and giving the baby its nourishment.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been there were cases where the uterus would become very flaccid and would refuse to shut down. And you would have these blood vessels that were just oozing blood, and a woman, and a young woman, we're talking about an 18, 25-year-old who has just had a baby, and all of a sudden, right there in front of you, she exsanguinates and literally dies in your hands while her, you know, because her uterus refused to shut down.
Wow.
And there was research going on, where they were looking at different drugs to try to help the uterus to clamp down.
Mm-hmm.
And a researcher here in the United States picked up the fact that there was a pituitary hormone, or there was some type of pituitary extract from the posterior part of the pituitary that could literally clamp down and shut off the uterus. Well, you know, they not only found that this stuff turned off blood supply, but it also caused the uterus to contract. And within 5 years, that pituitary extract was being used in all of medicine around the world. I mean, from the time of discovery to the time it was being used in medicine was almost 5 years. And they were using this extract throughout the world to, quote, turn off the uterus, or giving it to a woman who is in labor or whose labor kind of fizzles out. She's got the baby halfway out, and then all of a sudden the uterus turns off and no more contractions.
Right.
And they started giving this extract, and it literally turned off. It would take the uterus and make it contract and help the baby get out, or a uterus that was very flaccid, it would help it to turn off the blood supply so that you would not exsanguinate, you know, or mm-hmm. bleed to death while you're sitting there after having had this beautiful little baby.
Wow.
And it turns out that that hormone was called oxytocin. And back in those days, one of the researchers discovered that not only did oxytocin clamp down the uterus and make you have contractions when you were in labor, but oxytocin controlled the microcirculation out into the periphery.
Hmm.
Now, Jerry, you've been out in the public a lot, and you have met people who have cold hands. I mean, when you shake hands with them, their hands are like ice cubes.
Yeah, of course.
And these people not only have ice cube for hands, they have ice cubes for feet.
Mm-hmm.
And they look pasty white. They don't have that ruddy red look.
Right.
That typically is a problem with an oxytocin deficiency.
Hmm.
And that, because oxytocin controls the microcirculation out into the periphery. Now, it turns out that oxytocin not only helps you to have babies, but you have to ask yourself, why is it that men make oxytocin? You and I don't deliver babies.
Of course.
And we don't even nurse our children. And yet we're making oxytocin, and it's being squirted into the bloodstream every so many minutes. And it turns out that oxytocin is the hormone that controls your ability to cuddle. Like, there will be times that you'll hear your wife say, she'll look at you and say, honey, I've got this skin hunger. I have great desire for you, and I just want to be held by you.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, well, sure, baby, let me come on over there, and let me hug you and hold you and kiss you and all that type of stuff. She wants to be held. She wants to be, you know, both of you want to cuddle with each other. You want to hold each other. You'll see a mother who's just had her baby, and she's nursing the baby, and she's sitting there cuddling with the baby.
Sure.
And that's that hormone that controls that emotion in humans is oxytocin.
We have a caller, Dr. Fletches.
Go for it.
Thank you for calling. Welcome to Weekend Edition. Your name and where are you calling from, please? Hello? Hold on. Wrong button.
Hello?
Go ahead, yes.
Jerry, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. This is Mark from New York, and first of all, I want to thank you for bringing the Kevin Smith Show to us on the weekends. This is really great. I'm a big fan of your work. I've been following your work for a couple of years now, and with that, I will ask a question to the doctor. I'm familiar with the iodine therapy, and one of the things that I've added is a tart cherry juice concentrate that has a very high level of anthocyanin. And I noticed that since I've taken this, I had problems with joint pain, and I've noticed that anthocyanins curb inflammation. And the reason I'm connecting this with this discussion is because I've read that inflammation is an important factor in arterial sclerosis. Could you comment on that? And with that, I'll get off the line here.
All right. Well, thank you for the compliments, and I really appreciate you calling. Thank you.
Yeah. In fact, inflammation is felt to be a major source of hardening of the arteries. And inflammation is also felt to be the bedrock out of which cancer in the human body arises.
Mm-hmm.
There's a nice book that's been published within the last probably year and a half. It's called The Anti-Cancer Diet, A New Way of Life by Dr. Scribner. And this particular book, he was a psychiatrist who developed a brain tumor, and he sat there and said, why did I get this thing?
Mm-hmm.
And all the research is pointing to the fact that one of the reasons why the body will develop cancer is because of chronic inflammation. People who have chronic inflammation, patients with lupus, patients with rheumatoid arthritis, patients with diabetes, and so on and so on and so on. They all have problems with chronic inflammation, and the problem with that being an increased risk of development of cancer. Now, the thing is that in nature, there are many different powerful antioxidants and anti-inflammatory type natural foods that mm-hmm. can be used to decrease inflammation. In India, the most common source of that is a product called turmeric.
Right.
And I would recommend that every one of you should be cooking with turmeric at least two or three times a week. Whether you put the turmeric in your tofu or put the turmeric on your rice, but turmeric has got one of possibly the most powerful anti-inflammatory that is out there. It's called curcumin.
Mm-hmm.
And, that is one of them. The other thing, in pomegranate juice contains anti-inflammatories. And ginger contains anti-inflammatories. And it just keeps on going. There's a product out there called Boostwellia, which, for a lot of you, that is the same term as frankincense, like when the baby Jesus was in the manger and you got the three wise men coming to visit him, they bring to him myrrh, gold, and frankincense. Well, it turns out that frankincense in the human body is an anti-inflammatory.
Wow.
So the more anti-inflammatories that you take, the less problems with hardening of the arteries, the less problems with cancer you will see inside the human body.
Wow, fascinating.
Back to...
Yes, go ahead.
Back to oxytocin.
Oxytocin, yes.
It's the hormone that goes up when you cuddle. It's the hormone that goes up when a woman gets hugged. However, to hug a man, there is no rise in the oxytocin blood level. A woman that gets French kissed by her husband, there is no rise in her oxytocin blood levels. But if a woman French kisses her husband, the oxytocin levels go up.
Hmm.
Oxytocin is the hormone that's felt to help men and women to get engorged just before having relations. And we have now discovered that the drugs Viagra, Levitra, and Cialis all stimulate the making of oxytocin in the body.
Wow.
I've been thinking that it's a chemical in the body called nitric oxide, which helps to improve on microcirculation. But also, oxytocin is stimulated by these three these three chemicals, and it's oxytocin that helps you to have the desire to have relations, and it has the ability to stimulate you to have orgasms. So We had a very interesting case here in South Carolina. This was about probably 15 years ago, where a young 15-year-old was nursing her baby. And when you suck on the nipple, there is a release of oxytocin from the brain. Well, the oxytocin makes the milk come down so that a woman can nurse her baby.
Mm-hmm.
But oxytocin is also a very powerful hormone that helps to turn on women so that they're more willing to have sex and relations.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that this girl had a social worker that came in and visited with her, and the girl looked at the social worker and said, you know what? Every time I nurse this baby, I have this intense desire to want to go have sex. Well, the social worker thought it was so weird that the state of North Carolina took her baby away from her and put it into foster care until the girl went through psychiatric testing to make sure she wasn't strange.
We're breaking right now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, and let's take it up from there, because I know there's a lot more information about oxytocin. Folks, join us after the break. We'll be right back. And we're back, folks. Thanks for sticking with us after that break. We have a caller on the line, Dr. Fletches, and we have a lot of information to cover on oxytocin. I know it isn't just about sexuality. Do you feel like going into after hours with us? It's something that we offer from time to time.
I think that'd be great. Let's do it.
All right, folks. We've got at least another hour then. It's going to be caller dependent, but we're also going to be talking about oxytocin in some more detail. We have a caller. Let's see who this is. Hi, welcome to Weekend Edition. I'm Jerry Wills. Your name and where are you calling from, please?
It's Tony from Alberta.
Tony, thank you for hanging on. I know you were holding on during the break and just a little bit before, actually. You had a call, or I'm sorry, a comment or question for the doctor?
Yes, I'd say hi to you, Jerry, and Dr. Fletcher.
Yeah, thank you.
And I missed the first hour, so I have a question for Dr. Fletcher.
It's Fletcher's, Tony.
I was just wondering, I have artery blockage in my right leg, and I went to the vascular surgeon and he said there was a red flag that would indicate that I've got some plaque in the rest of my body. And I'm just wondering, I went to a naturopath and he said to try a raw diet, and that might help dissolve some of the plaque. What's your thoughts on that?
Once you've developed the plaque, it's very difficult to get rid of it. However, we do know that using anti-inflammatories, things like the pomegranate juice, the frankincense, there's a anti-inflammatory that is present in grapes called resveratrol. About 300 milligrams of resveratrol per day. And obviously the taking of iodine would help, probably to help push that plaque back. But the other thing.
Where do you get the iodine from? How do you get the iodine? Can you just go to a health store and get it?
The iodine, you can call my office and we can get that to you. I think you're up in Canada, right?
Get it. I'm in Canada. Okay. So.
Yeah.
Can I get it at a health store?
You can get Lugol solution at the pharmacies up there. And
okay.
You need about 2 drops a day of Lugol's.
How much was that?
Lugol's?
Yeah, how much?
Lugol's, L-U-G-O-L-S, Lugol solution.
Okay.
Which is an iodine solution, and he needs about 10 drops a day.
All right.
How much a day?
10 drops.
10 drops, okay. And you just take it pure, or you put it in water or something like that?
It would be better to... It has a pretty bad taste to it, so be sure you take it and put it in some juice. and then take it down that way. Like you can take five drops in the morning, five drops in the afternoon, but don't do like Jerry and take a bunch of drops just before you go to sleep, because iodine wakes up the human brain and it makes it much more mentally alert.
Oh boy!
And that's what happened to Jerry is that he's become more mentally alert with loading up with as much iodine as he did yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
Is it impossible to get iodorol in Canada, Dr. Fletches?
I think there are some pharmacies that have it, but you have to call around and see if there's some. I think there's some pharmacies over there in Toronto or over in Montreal, which may have it.
No, but I'm in Alberta. I'm in Alberta. I'm in Alberta, Canada.
Your local,
that's in Western
your
Canada.
Your regular pharmacies.
Would it be possible for...
Toronto and Montreal is in the east.
Yeah,
could I ask another question?
Yeah, go right ahead.
My wife has fibromyalgia. Is there anything she could take? She's tried everything and nothing helps her. Do you know of anything that could help her?
The Lugol solution has been helpful, or the iodorol. And we found some studies that were done a few years ago that those patients need about 100 milligrams of iodine a day, or the Lugol solution. And if you give them that plus the ATP cofactor or the vitamin B3, it's called niacinamide. Niacinamide, which is niacin, except that it's a non-blushing niacin, and
she needs
about 1,000 milligrams of that a day.
Okay, niacin 1,000. Okay.
Niacinamide.
Yeah.
Niacin. And the other one is riboflavin, 300 milligrams per day.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Lugol solution, it's 10 drops twice a day.
Iodine too, eh?
Up in Canada, you should be able to find Lugol solution at just about any of the compounding pharmacies.
Would it be possible for him to order this from you with him being in Canada, Dr. Fletcher?
He can order it from us and we can try to get it to him.
I think that would be your best bet, Tony, is to get a hold of Dr. Fletcher and order this.
Let me give you that telephone number.
Down then.
That's 828-684-3233.
What is that, 828?
No, it's say it again slowly, Dr. Fletcher. 628?
828-684-3233.
What? You know what, I'm going to put it up on the screen. Hold on just a second.
828-684-3233.
Okay, I'm going to have it on the screen right now.
Okay, I got it.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Yeah, and thank you for your
Welcome.
Call. Yeah, that's pretty impressive, you know, to be able to know what you know, and the way that you can just tell a person, you know, use this is going to help you. I just admire that. We have another caller. Hi, welcome to Weekend Edition. I'm Jerry. Okay, they hung up, so I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the diseases where oxytocin is missing, where there is no oxytocin in that human being, is the disease called autism.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that.
Autism are not making oxytocin. So as a result, you'll look at children who have autism and you'll see that they don't want to hug, they don't want to cuddle, they don't want to be held, And what's interesting is that oxytocin controls the social memory. That is, all of us here on the radio listening and so on, recording into our hard drives. We're all recording into our memory this conversation and this, and everything that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And a week from now, Jerry's going to say, now, last week when we talked about so on and so on and so on, all of you are going to say, yeah, I remember that conversation and so on. Oxytocin deficiency, the people, the children with this, especially with autism, have no social memory. So, like, let's say you play basketball or football with a child who has autism, and then tomorrow you come back and you say, where is the football that we played football with yesterday? And the child with the autism will look at you and say, we didn't play basketball yesterday or football, and I don't know what ball you're talking about. And the reason is that the child has no social memory.
We are going to take this into after hours, Dr. Fletches. We're at the top of the hour. Stick with us. Folks, if you're listening on the radio, you better switch over to the internet real fast. We're going to continue this with After Hours with Dr. Fletches. For the rest of you, don't go away. I have buttons to push, and I'm going to take the next caller who's on hold right now. As soon as we get back, it's going to be about a minute, minute and a half. No commercial breaks, nothing. This is all for you, and we'll keep going until at least an hour. See you guys in just a moment.
You're listening to After Hours with Jerry Wills on the Steel Eye Media Network.
Welcome to After Hours. I'm Jerry Wills. This is what happens, not all the time, but some of the time, whenever we have information that I feel is vital for you, so that you'll be able to get even more information from our guest. And of course, depends on whether I have time, if our guest has time, and if there's anyone interested to hear more information. It'll go for at least an hour. After Hours is viewer-generated in as much as your calls are going to keep this alive. Or, conversely, if the information, for example, we have Dr. Fletches still with us, if the information from Dr. Fletches is that important and there are no calls, we're still going to do this for posterity's sake, because thousands of people will hear this after this show is over. Once it's archived, you'll have access to this information. You'll have access to this if you're a member of the Kevin Smith Show, which means you've spent $6.95, you go into the membership area, and you have access to these details. This information you're going to hear tonight is absolutely over-the-top vital. We have one of the world's leading experts here, and it's going to be something that you're not going to want to miss, whether live or otherwise. So without any delay at all, we're going to first take a call. We have a caller on hold right now. And then from that point forward, we're going to be talking about a number of things that involve your health and your state of well-being. Caller, you're live on After Hours. I'm Jerry Wills. Welcome to the show. Give us your name and where you're calling from, please.
Yes, Hi, Jerry. It's Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
I have a question here. For about a week or so now, I've been taking 7% Lucrose iodine, two drops of iodine in a glass of milk. And I was told that after about a month to drop that down to one drop in a glass of milk daily. Is 7% enough for a guy 65 years old?
You need probably around 10 drops a day, and that is optimum as far as helping your health is concerned. One or two drops a day is not going to be enough to take care of your body. So for the best of health, you need about 10 drops of the liquid per day.
Okay, would you suggest I drink like 3 glasses of milk a day with, 3 or 4 drops in each glass, or just 2 glasses and 5 drops in each glass?
I think that would be a good way to go, yes.
Okay.
Not a problem.
And
okay.
I heard you talking about Jerry taking it, and about the fact that Jerry's taking it and it's making his brain more active, and that's what I was told this would do. That it would actually make my brain more alive, because as you get older, you have a tendency to get a little more dull.
That's right, and so that's why we'd never want you to take iodine just before you go to bed, or you're going to find yourself having a hard time going to sleep, and you're also going to find that you're just very mentally alert, and you're going to have a hard time shutting down that brain.
Boy, I can attest to that. I didn't get to sleep until about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning.
I believe it.
Okay, one more question here. I have a daughter that's about 35, and she seems to have a place that's bothering her in her throat like that, and she's had tests on it. But how much would she need to take at age 35?
She needs about 7 or 8 drops a day. And if the iodine should give you a problem with a metallic flavor in the back of your throat after you've taken it, you can take some chlorophyll tablets, which you can buy from any health food store, and get some chlorophyll and take about chlorophyll, a few drops, about 4 times a day for a week. And within that week, you'll see that the metallic flavor of the iodine disappears.
Now, Dr. Fletch, is there an advantage for him using Lugol's solution as opposed to the Iodorol?
There's no advantage. The problem is that Lugol's solution is very irritating to the human stomach,
mm-hmm.
and there will be about 20% of the people who take it who find themselves just vomiting up and feeling real nauseated when they take Lugol's.
I've read about that.
Whereas the Iodorol pills that we've been talking about, Iodorol, less than 0.5% of patients will complain about anything to do with the stomach.
And in either case, the ATP cofactor should be used? Because you said that...
That's correct.
You just don't really assimilate it without that.
Well, it's not an issue of assimilation. It's an issue of the iodine sticking to the proteins inside the body.
Exactly. Okay.
So ATP cofactor behaves like Velcro. It helps the iodine to stick to the proteins where it can do the work that is necessary throughout the body.
Okay. Does that answer
your... One thing, and is 7% too much? My wife said, what about 2%?
7% would be better, and the more iodine you take in, you know, about 50 to, let's say, anywhere from 50 to 100 milligrams a day, the better you'll find that your body performs and does. We have found that, just to give you an illustration, you know, in Japan, in the United States, they discovered at the Mayo Clinic that iodine helps to protect the body from prostate cancer. And what they find is like here in the United States, if you don't die from a heart attack, you'll probably die from prostate cancer that metastasizes and spreads to your body and kills you.
Wow.
It's interesting that in Japan, men do develop prostate cancer, but guess what? Nobody in Japan dies from prostate cancer because it doesn't metastasize. It goes nowhere.
Wow.
So in Japan, the incidence of death from prostate cancer is unheard of, whereas here it's about 40% of the males who get it will die from the metastatic prostate cancer.
Do you sell this Leukols through your clinic? I had to order this from out of the country.
We have the iodine in a tablet form. We don't have the liquid form, but we do have the tablet form, and yes, we sell it to people throughout the world.
Okay, would you suggest I stay with the liquid or go to the tablet?
If your stomach can tolerate it, stay with it. But if you find you're starting to feel nauseated and it's bothering your stomach, then it's time to switch over to the pills.
Yeah,
right.
But
so far I hadn't had any problem with it.
But I'm
one of those people who tried taking the liquid, and I felt nauseated all day long for a whole week before I said, "All right, that's enough. I'm ready to get thrown in the towel and go for the pills," you know.
But in any case, Mike, I think it's important to get the ATP cofactor.
Yeah, they sell that at the health food stores, don't they?
I went looking for it today. I didn't find it anywhere. I had to order it off the internet.
If you call my office, we can get that to you.
Okay, that's great. I have your number, and I appreciate you taking my call. Jerry, another great show, and we'll talk to you again later. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Now, I wonder what would happen, Dr. Fletches, if you were to take the iodine like I did, and then you took oxytocin.
You might find your orgasms a lot more powerful than you would anticipate. Now, the other thing, too, is that oxytocin not only controls social memory,
mm-hmm.
It controls emotional control. What's happened is that if you look at a child with autism, if they point at something and they say, "I want that piece of candy,"
mm-hmm.
and you say, "No, you can't have it," the child will literally melt down to the floor and scream and yell for the next 4 or 5 hours.
Wow.
Because they couldn't have that little piece of candy. And what happens is that when you give oxytocin to these children, all of a sudden they'll look at you and say, "Okay, well, you know, I can't have that, but I'm okay with that," you know. Whereas without the oxytocin, they're going to sit there and scream and yell. It's the hormone that helps you to be able to get on track as far as doing something about, let's say, having relations.
Mm-hmm.
One of my patients was able to get some oxytocin from a doctor, and he told me that when he was taking the oxytocin, that he was able to, and he has a problem known as Asperger's syndrome, which is a variant of autism.
Mm-hmm.
And when this guy was taking the oxytocin, that he literally found that he was able to stay on track and have interest in his wife and be able to accomplish what he set out to do as far as having relations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, women, oxytocin controls their cuddling, helps them to have better memories. Oxytocin controls their ability to have milk, and oxytocin is the hormone that controls the ability of women to have vaginal lubrication when they're having relations. And a lot of women confess to the fact that they're very dry whenever they have relations, and this helps them to have better lubrication. Oxytocin helps to knock out muscle pain. I've had patients who have fibromyalgia, and in fact, this is how I got interested in this whole field, is that I have a patient who is the wife of an Episcopal minister,
mm-hmm.
and she came in and told me, I asked her, I said, what is it that you do to help get rid of the fibromyalgia pain? And she looked at me and she said, look, she said, if I can have relations with my husband twice a day, she said, that would be 6 hours of no pain that I would have to go through.
Wow, fascinating.
Otherwise, I'd live in pain 24 hours a day. And she said, but when I have relations, I'm pain-free for at least 3 hours.
Wow.
And that's when I sat there and said, I wonder what happens when people have relations. And that's when I found, you know, and research showed that this having relations is totally dependent upon the presence of oxytocin.
That's just amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's also the hormone that helps women to have milk in their breast. And you'll see women who give birth to a child and then they can't nurse their babies, lack of oxytocin. You'll see women, like I had a girl that came in the other day that I saw. She said that, I said, well, how did your pregnancy go? And she said, well, I was supposed to deliver the baby at 40 weeks. And she said, at 42 weeks, I had yet to have my first contraction. And she said, I just had no contractions of my uterus whatsoever. And she said, we had to put me in the hospital and hook me up to an intravenous oxytocin drip to stimulate my uterus to get going and to have the baby.
Wow.
What she was describing for me was the fact that her pituitary, her body, was not making enough oxytocin to stimulate the uterus to go into contractions and go into labor and have the baby.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
Now, if you'll go into Google on the internet,
uh-huh.
you're going to find out, just type in the word oxytocin and migraine headaches,
mm-hmm.
and another one called trigeminal neuralgia, and you're going to find out that there's a doctor in the emergency room doctor down in Mississippi who was giving oxytocin for patients who walked into the emergency room having severe migraine headaches that were just the absolute killer type, you know, the ones that you vomit your toenails out through.
Right.
And he was giving these patients oxytocin, and their migraine headaches were disappearing. There's a group, medical group, up at Stanford Medical School at Stanford University who have now put out a patent on the control of who's going to give oxytocin for migraine headaches and for trigeminal neuralgia, and they've got a patent on this thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So it kind of shows you that oxytocin has the ability to kill pain, especially brain pain when you're having a severe migraine. Go ahead.
That's just absolutely amazing, you know, because I've encountered quite a few people that had these things that the doctors couldn't figure out what's wrong with them, why they have the pain, yet they still have it. And this is information that could save their sanity.
Yeah, and all you have to do is just Google on the word oxytocin and migraine headaches, or oxytocin and headaches, and you'll see the medical articles that have now been published on that.
Now, what about the state of mental health? Because I have two questions I'm curious about. One is the state of mental health, a person that may be depressed, or I think we kind of covered already, low libido, weight gain, that sort of thing. We kind of talked about that in terms of the iodine, but is there anything with the oxytocin associated with this, that the two are connected?
Well, oxytocin has been helpful as far as an antidepressant. In fact, you know, if I said the words serotonin, dopamine, acetylcholine, etc.,
sure,
you would recognize all these chemicals as neurotransmitters, as major hormones inside the brain and the spinal cord and so on.
Mm-hmm.
What you don't know is that oxytocin within the we've been thinking of oxytocin as a hormone that is, it's a hormone. What we did not know was is that in the human body, oxytocin works more like a neurotransmitter. It helps to stimulate the whole brain. It helps to calm down an agitated brain, mm-hmm. which is why in children with autism where they're super agitated, you give them oxytocin, those kids calm right down, you know, and they're the most pleasant little kids to be around. But without the oxytocin, they're monsters.
Wow.
So they're difficult to deal with, and they're difficult to control. And with oxytocin, they're much, much easier to handle. And also, without oxytocin, these kids have a tendency to want to eat lots of sugar.
Hmm.
Once you put them on oxytocin, the craving for sugar is not as much there, and they tend to eat a lot more different foods. They'll eat their vegetables and their other foods and so on and not be constantly looking for candy.
Now, we have a caller, and I have another question as well. So let's go to the caller, and I can get to my question before we get off the air. But hi, welcome to After Hours. I'm Jerry Wills. Your name, and where are you calling from, please? There we are.
I'm calling. I had some questions with regards to the iodine, and I'm wondering, if iodine increases the receptivity of every hormone in the body or the body's response to all the hormones, couldn't that be dangerous in some situations, like, say, for example, cortisol? If it were to stimulate excess cortisol, does that happen?
It doesn't stimulate the body to make more cortisol. It makes the body more receptive to the effects of cortisol. And what's also interesting is that the hormone oxytocin decreases the production of cortisol in the human body. So people who have too much cortisol that is being produced by the adrenal, oxytocin helps to neutralize and slow down the production of cortisol from the adrenal in those type of patients. And that's why oxytocin is known as an anti-stress hormone. It helps to relieve the body of the effects of stress. But the answer to the cortisol is that it helps the body to utilize what cortisone is there, and therefore the body finds itself decreasing cortisol production because of the beneficial effects of what's going on with the iodine.
Does that help with your question, ma'am?
So then you'd have to take them both. If you just were to take iodine alone, you could end up with an imbalance. Is that correct?
Not really. What ends up happening is, and we can talk about it in the sense of thyroid hormone, but it's not just the thyroid. We're talking also cortisone. And what happens is that when you are taking iodine and you already have, like, let's say you're taking Synthroid or thyroid hormone, once you start taking iodine, you'll find that in about 5 or 6 weeks, you end up using about half the amount of thyroid hormone, because the body is responding to half just as much as it did to a full thyroid pill. Now, what will happen is with cortisone production is that the cortisone production will drop a little bit or some in the presence of the iodine, because there's not as much need for as much hormone to do the same effect.
Okay. So, one last question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything, like, so far as taking too much iodine, how would you know if what you're taking in iodine, if it's too much for your system?
There's no such thing as too much iodine, only because if the body can't use the iodine, you'll pee it out in the urine.
So it's not an issue of having too much. In fact, the total body, this is a pearl, the total body can hold 1,500 milligrams of iodine at any one time. The thyroid gland holds only 50 milligrams of the total 1,500 milligrams.
Wow.
20% of all the iodine sits inside your skin. 32% of all the iodine sits inside the muscles. 35% of all the iodine sits inside the fat tissues of the body. And then the rest of it sits in all the other tissues of the body. So what we are finding is that, and also iodine inside the heart works as an antiarrhythmic. That is, it helps to cut down on these abnormal heartbeats that people suffer with as they get older.
Wow.
And so we have found that the total body can hold 1,500 milligrams of iodine, 20% in the skin, 32% in the muscle, but the thyroid at its maximum can only hold 50 milligrams of the total 1,500.
How does
the body, and if the body is saturated and you can't, and you, you know, and you take a large amount out of it, if the body can't use it, you spill it out inside the urine.
Okay, and can I ask one more question in terms
sure.
of how does the iodine impact blood sugar levels?
I'm sorry?
How does the iodine impact blood sugar levels? Like diabetics or insulin resistance, how does the iodine have any effect on blood sugar levels?
Let me just give you a story about one of my patients. This is a lady who came in. And she was sick, and she was taking, she developed diabetes with her illness, and when she, a normal blood sugar in the human body is up to 100, it's something like 60 to 100, this lady had a blood sugar of 1,500. She was only a few steps away from death. And so we put her in the hospital, we put her on intravenous insulin, we brought down her blood sugars into the normal range, and we let her go out of the hospital. 2 weeks later, after we had her controlled on insulin, she then showed up at the office, and I said, you know, when I was doing your physical exam, I noticed that you had a lot of lumpy, bumpy breasts, and I said, were they really tender, or have you had problems there? And she said, oh, yeah. She said, for about 2 weeks before my period, she said, my breasts just get really tender, and they hurt like the dickens. So then I said, well, the treatment of choice is to put you on iodine. So we put her on the iodorol tablets, and she calls up about 2 weeks later, and she tells my secretary, she says, you know, I'm starting to experience a little bit of hypoglycemia. My blood sugars are getting really low. So my secretary told me that, and I said, well, just tell her to cut back on the insulin to the point where she has no more hypoglycemia. So I see her back about a month later in the office, and I said, let me see your blood sugar testing machine, your glucometer. And she shows it to me, and her blood sugars are 80, 90, you know, numbers of that nature, okay? And I said, man, you're doing so wonderful to control your blood sugars.
That's amazing.
How much insulin are you doing now? And she looked at me, and she said, well, she said, I haven't been on insulin for the last 3 or 4 weeks. I said,
really?
What? And she said, yeah. She said, you said I could come off insulin. I said, yeah, but, you know, you were supposed to be controlling your blood sugar. She said, I have been. Look at my glucometer. You can see all my blood sugars are somewhere between 60 and 100. And I said, when did this happen? She said, ever since you put me on that iodine material, my diabetes has virtually disappeared.
My gosh.
Now, when I sat down and looked at it, I sat there and said, all right, what did we do here? And what happened is that we increased the sensitivity of the receptors for insulin in the body, and she was having better blood sugar control. Having said that, we have since then tried this same type of technology on about 20 different diabetics, and every one of these diabetics, about half of them were able to come off insulin, and the other half were able to totally reduce the total amount of insulin to control their diabetes because they had better blood sugar control. So the answer to the question is, iodine increases the sensitivity of the body to insulin, which then helps to have it let you have better sugar control.
Oh, great. Well, thank you very much. You answered all my questions and more.
Wow.
Welcome.
And where were you calling from?
I'm calling from Manitoba, Canada.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Great questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
Good night.
That, you know, you were saying earlier that iodine, hormones are very sensitive to iodine, that you have better use of them, I suppose you could say.
That's right. You increase the sensitivity of the body to the hormones that are already there by taking iodine. Obviously, the only hormone that doesn't participate in that statement is estrogen, because iodine turns off the making of estrogen inside the human body.
Now, there are three estrogens. Are you talking estrogen, estradiol, esterase?
We're talking about all estrogen in the body.
Okay, so for example, a person has too much estrogen. There's something out there called DIM. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
It's supposed to mop up the bad estrogen or something?
That's correct.
So a person wouldn't need the DIM if they're taking a good dosage of the iodine. Am I correct?
You got it. That's correct.
Huh. And what about free testosterone? Isn't there, I'm trying to remember now.
Now, in the body, like, let's talk about, that patient that was taking testosterone,
mm-hmm.
and her body became increasingly more sensitive to the presence of the testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
In the body, iodine helps the body to become more sensitive to testosterone. Therefore, you don't need as much testosterone to get the same effect from the testosterone.
Okay.
So instead of you're having to take 100 milligrams of testosterone to get the effects of the testosterone, you take 50 milligrams and get the same bang for the buck.
Wow. So in relation to people who are doing hormone testing, in this hormone testing protocol, if they're taking iodine, then they're going to end up with a much different panel than if they weren't, obviously.
That's correct.
But if they're taking replacement hormone therapy and they start using iodine, they may need to get retested, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
The other thing, too, is that we have written a whole group of articles that people can download for free off the Internet. And it's called, we have a website called helpmythyroid.com. And on that website is a list of all the medical articles we've written on iodine. And these articles can be downloaded at no cost. And also we have a iodine testing laboratory where we can actually measure a person's iodine blood levels,
mm-hmm.
or iodine urine levels. And the articles can be downloaded off that website, too. It's called FFPlab.org.
Okay. See, I put that up on the up on the screen here. I'm going to have to change
that
because
I don't know. FFPlab.org. And that will get you to the website for my medical laboratory where we can actually test to see if a person is iodine deficient.
We have a caller, Dr. Fletches.
Okay.
Welcome to After Hours. I'm Jerry Wills. Your name and where are you calling from, please?
Hi, Jerry. This is Matt. I'm calling from Michigan.
Yeah, hi, Matt.
Hi. I have a question for Dr. Fletches. You were mentioning the connection between oxytocin and autism. And I was wondering if you had any ideas in terms of why we're seeing more of this now than before. Is there something that's happening either in gestation or shortly after birth that you think might be causing these children to not be able to produce oxytocin on their own?
Well, you know, what's interesting is, number one, is that if you look at the Amish there in Pennsylvania, the Amish don't believe in immunizing their children. And they looked at 30,000 Amish children in some communities, and when they looked at all these kids, they found zero autism among these children. If you looked at the rate of autism in the rest of the nation where we are immunizing the children, you will find that the rate of autism is like one out of every 91 children right now. One out of every 91 has got autism. Among the Amish, where they're not immunizing, 30,000 children, no autism. Now, if you look at the vaccine that probably gives us the most trouble, it's the MMR, which is the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. And when I was a resident many years ago, I was working in an ophthalmology office, and a little girl that was 8 years old came in, and she was acutely blind from coming down with the measles. And it turns out that when you develop measles, you develop brain antibodies. 90% of children with autism have antibodies against different sectors of their brain tissue. And it's not just with the MMR. It's even true with children who develop measles. They'll go out there and do the same thing. And it turns out that when we give the MMR vaccine, it's live measles virus. And that virus is somehow causing an immune reaction in these children with autism. They're developing antibodies against brain tissue. And we think that some of those antibodies are directed against the proteins that help the body to make oxytocin. That's why children with autism are just virtually oxytocin deficient, down to the level of there being virtually nothing in the bloodstream that you can detect.
Did that help answer your question? And you need to turn your radio down on your end. It's feeding back in here.
But you can go on.
Better now. Actually, I have the radio off.
Go on. You can go on Google and type in the word oxytocin, autism, humans, treatment, and you'll see the articles that have now been published out of New York where they've been treating children with oxytocin for their autism and how these kids are just turning around very dramatically.
Well, thank you. That's very interesting. I guess one follow-up to that question then would be, does it seem like something that the function that could be rehabilitated over time, or do you feel does it look like these children are going to need to continue treatment with oxytocin for their entire lives?
They will probably need oxytocin for the rest of their lives. As far as I know right now, we don't have enough experience to be able to say very much more beyond that. There is a pharmacy in Colorado that makes oxytocin pills, and you can have your doctor write a prescription for those, but the pharmacy is called Belmar Pharmacy in Lakewood, Colorado. It's a little suburb just outside Denver,
But that pharmacy, Belmar Pharmacy in Lakewood, Colorado, has successfully made a oxytocin pill that can be swallowed, and it can be functional, and it's helping these children to turn around.
Oh, great. Well, thank you. I appreciate the information.
You're most welcome.
Thanks for calling, Matt. That's one of the other things, you know. And I was reading about this, the saying that the oxytocin is destroyed in the intestines, and these folks had made a pill successfully. That's quite an accomplishment.
Yep, they've been able to make a pill that gets absorbed into the blood, into the lymphatic system of the intestine, not the bloodstream, because if it makes it into the bloodstream, it goes to the liver and gets destroyed there.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets absorbed by the lymphatic system where the white blood cells are, and then gets dumped into the body through a totally different location and does its job. Now, oxytocin also controls the strength of a human orgasm, and the higher the level of oxytocin in the bloodstream,
mm-hmm.
the more orgasms a human has. So 13% of women who take, 13% of all American women that are sitting out there, and also those Canadian girls up there, 13% are multi-orgasmic.
Mm-hmm.
In the presence of taking oxytocin, we have now documented that the incidence of multi-orgasm now goes up to 53%.
Wow, that's quite an increase.
Just about half the women in, you know, that were taking oxytocin in my practice were multi-orgasmic.
We have a caller. Let's find out who this is. Hi, welcome to After Hours. I'm Jerry Wills. Your name and where are you calling from, please?
This is Aradani calling from San Diego. What a show. What a show.
Well, thank you.
My goodness, going from oxytocin to iodine, I'm writing furiously many, many notes. And I would love to bounce back to iodine for a moment.
Sure.
I got this thought when the doctor spoke of estrogen, in that the iodine actually stops the estrogen, if I understood that correctly. I wonder if we know that if it would support a woman who has uterine fibroids. This is something that goes up and down with the menstrual cycle and with estrogen.
Actually, I've spoken to Dr. David Brownstein, who's up in Detroit, and David has repeatedly told me that he's had women whose fibroids shrunk in the presence of taking iodine, and the reason is that estrogen stimulates the fibroids to get big. And without estrogen, those fibroids shrink. Now, let me give you something else that you would probably love to hear. Estrogen is the hormone that turns off the ability of a woman to grow tall. So,
really?
Estrogen, from the time a woman starts having menstrual periods, 2.5 years later, she stops growing because the estrogen puts a clamp on the bones and says you only grow to this point and that's it. Now, I've got a little 13-year-old in my practice who has PMS, and she also is like 4'10", and she would like to become a professional volleyball player in the future, and volleyball players are usually around 6 foot tall, etc. Her mother's 5'10". This girl hasn't started having periods yet, so I put her on iodine to turn off estrogen production, and within 1 year, this kid has grown 7 inches.
My gosh.
Wow.
And she still has yet to start her first period. But this tells, you know, so I told her, I said, look, when we get you up to 5'10", we'll take you off the iodine and let your body just grow up to the height that you want to be. She's got a brother who's 6'5", and she is now 5'5". but it's all happened within 1 year.
That's amazing. Yeah, when I was in the eighth grade, I grew 1 foot. I went from 5'8 to 6'8 in a year.
You don't sound like you're 6'8.
Good news about the fibroids. Thank you, doctor, for this evening. It's been extremely informative.
You're welcome.
And thank you for the call. I appreciate you calling in.
Thank you, Jerry.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I'm 6'9".
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, and I grew up on a farm. We washed the cows with iodine. The salt that the cows used, they only got the salt for the cows that had the iodine in it to keep the cows healthy. We had 2 milk cows, and we didn't pasteurize the milk, drank it right down after chilling it in a refrigerator. I must have drank a gallon a day. And I ate them out of house and home. I had a ferocious appetite.
Yeah.
Amazing. So one of the things that we were talking about just a little bit ago was, and I may not be clear on this, so excuse me if I botch it, but the adrenal glands. Now, as I understood it, this is where oxytocin is being produced from. Am I correct?
You know, that's a misnomer, because oxytocin is actually produced in just about most tissues throughout the body. It's made by the testicle, it's made by the prostate, it's made by the ovaries, it's made by the pancreas, It's made by the thymus, it's made by the pituitary, it's made by the pineal gland, it's made by the retinal tissue, the retina in the back of the eye.
Wow.
And it's even made by the heart. And it turns out that oxytocin has got a multitude of different functions inside the body other than just letting you have babies and nursing them and having orgasms.
Mm-hmm.
It has a multitude of different things that it does throughout the whole body.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because I have known... I've known folks, women, who have mentioned to me in my practice and what I do that after they had some very intense, stressful times, these may have gone on for 6 months to a year, and I'm talking intense stuff, personal stuff, that their sex drive seemed to just dry up, that they just didn't have any interest anymore. And
that's right.
So what I'm theorizing is that because there's so much stress, of course the adrenals are going to be stressed out and there's going to be a lot more cortisol. And that means that there's going to be much less oxytocin, and I'm further theorizing that this may be a natural state within the body, that if there's a lot of stress, oxytocin, part of what it does with cuddling is towards the reproductive act. And if there's that much stress, if that kind of thing's going on, you certainly don't want to bring a baby into the world. You don't want that reproductive action, and it may be turning off that that need for that closeness. But past a certain point, it just doesn't come back.
Well, that's true, you know. And I had a patient who a few years ago had given birth to a baby, and she was nursing her baby, and then still nursing the baby at about 3 months after the birth of the child, and her husband came up to her and said, "I want a divorce."
Wow.
How much more stress can you get?
Yeah.
And then what happened is that even though she was nursing this child, her milk supply dried up.
I've heard of that.
And basically the stress of having to deal with the personal, you know, problems with trying to maintain a family, trying to nurse her baby, the stress dried up her ability to make oxytocin and therefore no milk. So you can talk to me about the fact that stress increases cortisone production, but it increases it because the oxytocin levels have gone down, because I can take that stressed out adrenal that's making too much cortisone, and I can give that adrenal some oxytocin, and I can turn off, within a 24-hour period, I can turn off the cortisone production mechanism.
Wow. Does it last?
Oxytocin is what takes care of them.
But is this like resetting? Because what I see in folks is that there's a stress level that they start out young, and their stress level when they would just really go over the top, let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being they'd have to get to 10 before they'd really get wigged out.
Yeah.
But as they get older, they encounter different stressful things. And now they're probably about a 2 or a 3, and they come unglued. And I've been trying to figure this out. Do you think the oxytocin is something that can reset that, if not immediately over time?
In fact, look at this concept.
Mm-hmm.
If I give thyroid hormone to the human body, I stop the production of thyroid hormone in the thyroid. If I give cortisone, external cortisone, to the human body, the adrenals will stop making cortisone. But what's interesting is that if you give oxytocin to the human body makes more oxytocin.
Oh, really?
It doesn't decrease it. It increases it.
Huh.
It has a positive feedback mechanism for it, not a negative feedback mechanism.
Well, see, then I was wondering about that, because I know that if you put thyroid in, for example, the person would stop producing. And I didn't know if the body would start producing on its own or not. But that's really interesting about the oxytocin.
Yes, oxytocin does not follow those same rules as all the other hormones out there.
So how much oxytocin, I mean, we're talking 50 milligrams of iodine. Is there a dosage pattern for oxytocin?
You can go anywhere from 10 to 20 or 30 units a day.
Is that all at once?
Belmar Pharmacy makes a 10, 20, and 30-unit tablet.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, you know, I have a gynecologist friend who, he's 44 and his wife was 28. And he gave a injection of oxytocin to his wife, 10 units.
Mm-hmm.
And then about an hour later, he stimulated her and she had the most incredible orgasm her life she had ever seen. And then, about 2 or 3 hours later, she looked at him and said, "Honey, are you still available?" He said, "Sure." By then, he was loaded with Viagra. And when he stimulated her, she went into an orgasm and stayed in a perpetual orgasm for about 28 minutes. The average human orgasm is only like 22 seconds long. This lady was in one for 28 minutes from just that one shot of oxytocin.
I'm speechless.
Yes. But I can also tell you that we have seen it's that experience with that gynecologist and his wife is not unique. I have seen it over and over and over again where couples have come in to the office and said, "Let me tell you about what happened to us with oxytocin." And, you know, and we've had some very interesting stories that have developed from that. But what I can tell you is that it works, it works, it works.
Wow.
And, you know.
Well, you know, my philosophy.
It's not the source of fables.
My philosophy is if a little is good, if a little is all right, a lot is better. Is there an upper limit? I mean, what happens if you took too much of this?
Well, I'll tell you what happens. What happens is one of my patients did that with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is this is the hormone that makes you want to cuddle. It's the hormone that gives you skin hunger.
Mm-hmm.
It's the hormone that makes you want to be in contact with your love object.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is that the guy noticed that the more oxytocin he gave his wife, the more she wanted to be in touch with him, literally physically touching him, you know,
mm-hmm.
Whether he was asleep or if they were alert or awake, or if he noticed that if he moved from one room to another in the house, she just would follow him like a little puppy dog from one place to the other. And when they were sitting, eating lunch, instead of sitting in her chair, she was sitting in his lap, eating her lunch with him. But she had to physically be in touch with her love object. And he said the more oxytocin he gave her, the more intense these emotions became. So the answer is, let's say you give your wife 10 units or 20 units or 30 units of this, do not walk away from your wife, because when you do that, you are going to create an intense hunger inside of her to want to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you walk away from her, you are going to create some tremendous mess emotionally on her part, you know, because she wants you and she wants you desperately.
Well, we've been talking about what it does for women, but what does it do for a man?
It does the same thing. We had an endocrinologist in Europe who took the oxytocin,
mm-hmm.
and he did, his behavior was exactly what I just described here.
Wow.
His wife went from one room to the other. He followed her around like a puppy dog. When she was laying down in bed, he was physically having to touch her the whole night. He's a person who really doesn't have very much emotion.
Mm-hmm.
But in the presence of oxytocin, he couldn't stop touching his wife the whole time.
Wow.
As long as the hormone was active, he was having to cuddle, to hold, to be in touch with his wife. And she was like, there was hardly any place she could go, whether it went to the grocery store or go from one room to the other. He was just following her. But when the hormone wore off, then he was back to his normal grouchy self.
How long does it take to wear off?
It takes about the oxytocin pills from Belmar Pharmacy
mm-hmm.
last around 16, 18 hours. So go have fun.
I just received a flash message from Kathy. She's in the other room watching this on the monitors. You know, she's maintaining the engineering at that end of the studio, and she wrote that my face is red. I really can't tell. I don't have my glasses on. I didn't want to have to pay attention to time right now. But, you know, this is some really serious stuff, folks. Think about what this means to marriages that are in trouble because there's a loss of interest. I mean, it's fun, it's cute, and it makes us laugh and giggle when we talk about sexuality and so forth. But the bottom line is that there are marriages that are in trouble. There are people who feel abandoned. There are people who feel as though they have lost that vital connection to their significant other because of a lack of sexuality. And there are people who are saying, look, go get a hormone test or try these vitamins or get more exercise, and it doesn't work. They've tried all that. And here's information that can not only rescue a relationship, perhaps save a marriage, a family, but it's also information that you can take with you the rest of your life now, and you can move into a whole new dynamic of experience just by knowing this between the iodine and the oxytocin. I am absolutely blown away. Of course, I get a little red sometimes when we're talking about some of these things.
I can't help it. It's just the way it is. But the truth is, this is vital information. This is the stuff that gives you pleasure in life, that gives you a reason to feel connected. And if you can feel that closeness and that connectedness for 16 hours, and it helps the body to remember how to produce this on its own, what kind of world might we be living in a few years if a lot more people were doing this sort of thing? Dr. Fletchus has done us all an incredible service. We have a caller, Dr. Fletchus. Let's go to the phone lines. Hi, you're on After Hours with Jerry Wills. Your name and where you come from, please.
Hey, Jerry. This is Jeff in Mississippi.
Hello, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I can't hear you very well, Jerry, but I'm trying to move, or maybe I can hear you better. A great show tonight. I think it is awesome. Dr. Fletcher, awesome information. I wanted to say thank you, and I think we need you back another night, and I think it'd be great if we had more health shows like this pretty regular. I was wondering if you could go over, I had a quick question. I'll just kind of run the questions out there, and then I can take it off the air. I was wondering if you could go over the doses of the IR Oderol again. I missed part of the, missed the first part of the show. And I was also wondering, you mentioned the high levels of vitamin C that a goat produces earlier, and I was wondering if you could comment something on if you're drinking raw goat milk, are you picking up the vitamin C that way? And I think that's all I got for right now. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for calling, Jeff.
Thank y'all. I appreciate it. It's a great show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think goat's milk is loaded with vitamin C, but goat's milk is folic acid deficient. There is no folic acid in goat's milk. I think it does have a lot of vitamin C in it. And the thing that we focused in on, the problem with iodine, is the fact that iodine, the absence of iodine, stimulates the breast to make scar tissue, cyst, painful breast, and gorged breast, and women, and it creates women who don't want to be touched. I mean, I've had women come in and say, look, doc, these two things that are sitting on my chest are like two huge thorns. I want them removed, and I want to get some implants put in. And I said, what if I just gave you a pill that I could take away the breast pain? Would you be willing to hang on to them? They said, sure. And we put them on iodine, and the breast pain would disappear. But the thing is that iodine takes away the pain of the breast, and it turns, and it can do it within a period of 3 or 4 weeks. And this is quoting to you a paper that was published by Dr. Ghent, G-H-E-N-T, and he was a surgeon up in Calgary, Canada, and Dr. Ghent was able to prove that it is iodine, that an iodine deficiency, that's the source of fibrocystic breast disease. And when you take iodine, the problem disappears. How bad is this problem? 94% of all American women have fibrocystic breast disease. This isn't just a few, you know, 12% or 6%. We're talking 94% of all the women in North America are iodine deficient, and they're developing problems with this painful breast condition. And the problem is that we in medicine think that, oh, we got plenty of iodine in the salt, but salt only contains maybe 77 micrograms of iodine, and breast tissue needs at least 5 milligrams of iodine just to maintain its health.
Wow.
There's no way that you can take that much salt and keep the breast in good health.
Well, then you'd be taking that much salt, and you'd just, well, you know, be overdoing it on the salt.
Hypertensive.
Yeah, exactly. That's the word I was looking
for. That's why we had to develop an iodine pill
to try to get this problem under control, because this is a massive epidemic that's occurred nationwide. And what's interesting is it's happening right underneath the noses of all the medical doctors who are sitting there saying there's nothing wrong out there.
Wow. Absolutely incredible. I just don't know what to say. We've gone a little over an hour, Dr. Fletches.
Yeah, we're past, isn't it?
Yeah, about 4 minutes, which is okay with me. We've got a lot of folks listening and watching on the internet all over the world, according to the information I have in front of me. So this is helping a lot of people. And folks, this is going to be on in an archive. I want to make it available to you. So if you missed any part of this, you'll be able to go back and watch all of this in its entirety. Dr. Fletches, I think we're going to probably close it out for now. I know you have to get up early in the morning. Folks, he's on the East Coast, which means that where he is, it's about 1:05 in the morning. You have done such a service to all of us, Dr. Fletches. I am so deeply grateful for you being my guest this evening.
Well, I'll tell you what, this conversation is going to create some nice pillow talk tonight.
Absolutely. And what would you, one last thing, what would you say to someone who said, oh, I don't want to try this oxytocin stuff? What would you say to them?
That they want to try it?
No, that they don't want to.
I just sit there and say they may be scared to have problems, you know, with the issue of intimacy.
All right.
Because it's going to create that type of, that type of language.
Good answer. Absolutely fabulous. I guess that's it for tonight. I'd love to have you on again sometime if you're interested.
Yeah, let's get together. You know, there's a lot of good medical stuff out there that we can discuss, you know, and so on.
All right. Well, I would...
Then as we keep up with what's going on in the research world of oxytocin,
mm-hmm.
then we'll be able to advance the subject even more, but... Belmar Pharmacy in Colorado has the formula, and doctors can write for that formula. Just call the pharmacist there, and he can tell you how to write the prescription and how to get it to him.
And, folks, I have Dr. Fletch's phone number for his office on your screen. It is 828-684-3233. Do you do phone consultations?
Medical law in North Carolina does not allow me to do consults on people that I've never seen before.
All right. So they need to come to see you. What if they have questions? Is your staff or are you available to answer questions?
Usually I can't do that because of medical legal issues.
Okay. So if they wanted to make...
At the moment I start giving medical... prescriptions or medical advice, then mm-hmm. that puts me in a malpractice issue.
I see. So there we go.
We have to be careful. So I usually have to be able to see people to help them out. I don't mind giving information about supplements, but when it comes down to prescription things, people need to come in and be seen, and that's just part of the North Carolina medical law.
Well, and folks, going to the area of North Carolina where Dr. Fletches is, it would be worth your time.
You can come by and see me.
Absolutely. But for ordering Iodorol or ATP cofactor, they can call that number and do that?
They sure can.
All right. Well, folks, you know, I've been all over the internet. I think this is your one-stop shop right here. All right. Well, we're going to close out the show. Dr. Fletches, stay on the line with me just for about another minute. I wanted to cue up the end of the show. I want to thank everyone who has tuned in, who's been a part of this entire evening between the regular programming and after hours. I'm Jerry Wills, and I'll see you next weekend. Meanwhile, tomorrow night, Kevin Smith has a phenomenal guest. You don't want to miss that.
7 o'clock Pacific, 10 o'clock Eastern. Don't miss the Kevin Smith Show. And let's see here. There goes our goodbye music. Good night, everyone. See you next weekend.
Comments and views expressed on the Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, the Kevin Smith Show, Jerry Wills, or its affiliates or sponsors.